Following program deals with military and veteran issues. All comments and opinions expressed on this show are of those who made them. They do not reflect the opinions of the Church of Satan or Radio Free Satan. So on with the show.
Welcome to the official Infernal Legion podcast. This is our monthly Sinister Scuttlebutt episode. See, I told you guys I'd have a better name for it this month. For those of you who are not aware, Scuttlebutt is Navy jargon for rumors and news that comes out of the barracks or the locker room or whatever. So we're going to use it. We're going to acquire it. This is, from henceforth, will be known as the Sinister Scuttlebutt episode of the month. I am Warlock Jeff Bowling, the commander of the Infernal Legion, and with me, as always, is my lovable furry co-host, Satanist Dwayne Burns, the VSO of the Infernal Legion. Dwayne, how the hell are you, sir?
I'm good. I got lost.
He's so talkative.
I'm having a bad fucking day.
Well, Dwayne, you have some news, right? Your son is getting ready to dive in.
Yeah, well, he's got to get 4 credits. We're thinking maybe by end of first semester. They're not requiring the kids to actually go into class or letting them do online learning down here. But shit, all he's doing for classes are like weightlifting and shit like that because of his football, and they're actually giving him credits for it. But he needs 4 credits. He's been busting ass on the ASVAB. He didn't score quite what we wanted to when he first went in, but I took him in Thursday this week, and he brought it up by 12 points, his ASVAB. We're gonna get him. I guess he's going in. He wants to be infantry.
Doesn't need that high of a score.
No.
Well, the thing is he doesn't. You're right. He can get in with a 31 QT score. You guys know what the fuck that is. Yeah. He can get in with a 31 QT score, but if he gets a 50, they'll give him 56,000 cash for a bonus, and they'll give them 79,000 for college. And a new program that they're running is if Trevor decides to, well, said my kid's name over the air. Oh shit.
Yeah. I can't figure it out.
Now, anybody comes after him, he'll just whip their ass. I mean, his calves are as big as our heads. So, anyway, if Trevor decides to just do like correspondence courses or things of that nature, they've started up a new program where Trevor can will or give away his $79,000 in college money to like his sisters. Or it's just some new program they've started, which I was surprised by because I did some recruiting while I was in.
I wish they'd do that with the fucking GI Bill.
Yeah.
Well, that is the college money.
Yeah,
I don't know if we're grandfathered into that or not, but that's what they're doing right now. Or if you've got to be contracted because of your AFQT score or whatever. But yeah.
That is.
So hold on, let's go back to that for a minute. What are you saying? Are you saying they got rid of the GI Bill and they're just giving $79,000 for college?
They said they were giving him $79,000 for college.
Okay.
And he doesn't have to use that if he...
No, I understand that, but what about the GI Bill?
It's not called that. They didn't say it was that. It was just for college.
Okay, so that's an additional funding. All right, cool. I just wanted to check on that.
An additional incentive for you.
Because that would be huge news right here if they got rid of the GI Bill.
I'll talk with the recruiter and get the exact poop on it if you really want it. But he said that he could will that off to one of his two sisters. I was like, shit, that's fucking cool.
Yeah.
Because a lot of us got our degrees and can still get our degrees by sending our shit off to like Vincent's or one of those colleges that'll, throw your shit into college credits for a military degree. Mm-hmm. They just call it like a bachelor's or associate's of military science.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, that's cool. So he's going through the recruiting process, just needs four more credits, and then he's going to sign on the dotted line, huh?
Yeah, we're going to get him in on delayed entry. They've really changed shit. You can make E2 by like learning the rank structure, learning your three general orders, shit like that. They'll just give you E2 to go in.
Anything to make the drill sergeant's life easier. Right?
And then he can get E3 if he can get some sorry son of a bitch to say that he talked him into going in.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to get him in there with the most rank that I can before he goes to get the biggest paycheck he can get.
Yeah, I got to take advantage of the system, because you know when you're being recruited, the system's taking advantage of you. So you got to do the same.
There were a few times a recruiter said something and I turned around. Yeah, and I said, hey, that's wrong. And the recruiter kind of looked at me and said, man, just cool. And we're telling him that so that he does better here or better there. Like they told him when I brought him in for his retest, because I wanted him to get a higher score to take advantage of incentives. They wanted to sign him up right away. I said, the fuck you are. I said, the kid's going to get the bonus money.
I'm surprised they're offering a bonus for infantry.
Yeah, no lie.
Oh, yeah. But you got to get a 50. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or higher, but where the fuck was I going? No, they said something to him to the effect of, well, when you take the test this time, it's going to be harder. And I looked at Trevor, I said, look, I said, it ain't going to be any harder. Don't listen to that bullshit. Just go in there and do your best on it. And the recruiter looked at me like, man, we tell them that shit so that when they come out and they got a better score, they feel better about it. I said,
so it's like icing on the cake or whatever.
Yeah, I said, well, I don't bullshit my kids. So, I just want them to go in there, do the best job you can, and let's go get on with it.
And that, yeah, has he taken the test officially, or has he just been practicing?
He's been taking practice tests.
Okay,
they do that differently now, too. You take a 3-hour test in the recruiter's office, and then they take that score. And then you go to the MEPS and you take like a 20-minute test where it's just, you know, a few questions, and they match both tests up. And if there's a wide range, like he scored considerably higher at the office, they know the recruiter was in there in your ear.
Yeah, they were doing that back when I
was there. They didn't do it when I did. We went in there. We were in the fucking office in the MEPS. The night before your physical, we're in there for 4 hours, 4.5 hours, taking a fucking test till 11 at night. And then they got us up at dark 30, 4 in the morning. Get your asses down here, eat. Now we got to get across the street and physical.
I took my ASVAB in the same week through the high school that I was at. So I took it in the same week that I took the SATs and the ACTs. And I scored the lowest on the ASVAB, but my GT score was still a 121. So I just basically threw away any chance of academic scholarships or anything like that, because I'm a fucking idiot now.
Yeah, I'm not allowing him to do that. I'm not saying you're an idiot, but I'm not allowing him to do that. They were like, let's just sign him up right now. I was like, the fuck you are.
I like that. The fuck you are. It's not going to happen.
Crazy Ivan, what you got, brother?
Yeah, so also joining us on the podcast is our, I don't know what to describe you as now that you're a commander.
Well,
I'm still going to say lovable producer. He's still
lovable producer. I'm the lovable producer. That's fine.
Warlock Jeffrey Ivins.
And he's got clothes on today.
The communications officer of the Infernal Legion and the host of the Metro right here on Radio Free Satan. Make sure you check that show out. Mr. Ivins, how the hell are you, man?
I'm doing well.
Tell us all about the Sea Cadets. All the big news that you teased us with for a month.
Oh, yeah. Basically, I was brought back in because the former commanding officer of the Sea Cadet Battalion I'm with got promoted to regional director, and he wanted somebody that he was comfortable with to run the unit that he was leaving. So he brought me back in and got me promoted to commanding officer.
Oh shit! I thought he touched you in the naughty place, and you threatened him to
No.
Commander, or you were going to...
No.
Okay.
All I got to do is I got to complete one more, what they call training.
Basically,
well, this training is basically where cadets go. Like, they got recruit training, POLA, which is Petty Officer Leadership Academy and stuff like that. I got to do one more of those, and then I can get promoted to lieutenant in the program. I'm already a lieutenant JG in the program.
Cool. But you are officially in charge.
Oh, yeah, as of the 1st of July.
Very cool. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's kind of an honor.
What kind of big plans do you have? What kind of hell are you going to put these kids through?
Oh, no. I'm not. with this COVID shit going on? Oh, hell no. But no, I'm gonna work with them and get them, you know, like one kid has trouble doing cardio, doing the run. So I'm gonna pair him up with somebody that's really good at running, and then I'm gonna have them work together to get the kid to be able to run better and stuff like that.
Interesting. I saw that the Navy has started doing, I think since like the late 2000s, has started incorporating basic marksmanship into boot camp,
mm-hmm.
which they didn't do for a very long time. With that change in the official Navy, have groups like the Sea Cadets and whatnot, have they started incorporating any kind of like hunter safety or anything like that into their stuff?
There's actually a ribbon for marksmanship that they can get. With the COVID going on, there's no way of taking them to the gun range.
Sure, yeah.
But they've got... You can get sharpshooter or expert or just the regular marksman ribbon just by going through the NRA course and stuff like that. So, you know, one day they go through the course, prove that they can shoot with a .22, and then the next day they qualify for whatever for the ribbons and stuff like that. So
that's what they used to do for us when we were, I was in Civil Air Patrol actually, which was the Air Force version of all of it. And, hell, they had us go to we had our meetings at the National Guard Armory, yeah. Army National Guard. And, the supply sergeant would come in and, he'd take, and bring out the M16s, and he had a special, bolt that he put in that would fire 22s through the M16.
Yeah.
And we'd go down in the basement to the shooting range in the basement of the, and I mean, it was just made for handguns, but, we'd take the M16s down there, and he had these special targets that would simulate 50 meters, 100 meters, yeah. 200, 300. And we'd go down there and we'd shoot 22s through the M16s. We thought we were the king shit. Yeah, 16s.
Till you found out it was only a 22 you were firing.
Well.
Yeah, once you realized the difference between calibers, you were like, son of a bitch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But no, it's
I always thought it was pretty. I just always thought it was cool that you could convert the 16 over to a 22.
Yeah,
that was the whole thing behind Colt when they first made the AR variety was for it to be super interchangeable. So that's why it's such a great weapon. Honestly, mm-hmm. It's also a trash weapon because it's gas fed. But you know, that's a whole other thing. Jackpot says hello to the listening audience.
Hello, Jackpot.
All right, so
we're all full of hot air, so the 16 was just fine for us.
One of these days, I'll tell the story about breaking my drill sergeant's nose because of a 16. But anywho,
no brass, no ammo, drill sergeant.
Let's jump on into to the show, shall we? Let's start up the show. And yes, this is the Sinister Scuttlebutt edition, but we have some news outside of the general military that just applies right here to the Infernal Legion. And I'm always happy when I get to do stuff like this. So first and foremost, I want to give a shout out to four people who are not veterans of the United States Armed Forces or any other country's armed forces for that matter. However, they have just been inducted as honorary members of the Infernal Legion due to their support and help with everything we've been working on for the last 3 years. So, of course, I have to give a special Infernal Legion horn salute to Magus Peter H. Gilmore and Magistra Peggy Nadramia, the High Priest and Priestess of the Church of Satan. I reached out to them back in 2017 when I first came up with this crazy idea with Raul, and they have been nothing but supportive ever since. If you guys have listened to the show before, you've probably heard some of Magus Gilmore's commentary and things. If you're on social media, you probably discussed some of this stuff with Magister Nadramia. They have 100% supported us and thrown everything behind us to help us do
Peggy,
this.
Peggy listens to, if she doesn't listen to all the show, she does listen, you know, to what she can of it every time it's on.
They
she,
offer,
told, she told me that down at DR.
They offer feedback whenever they have something. They always offer their help. They're always there for us. They're willing to utilize their platform to help us grow. Just amazing stuff that the High Priest and Priestess have done for the Infernal Legion. So, of course, we inducted them as honorary members of the Infernal Legion. Also, some people may remember that I said her name before, but Priestess Christine McGuire, the Countess, is a full-fledged honorary member of the Infernal Legion now, and that is because of her role working with the Department of Veterans Affairs. She's another one that from the very beginning, when I reached out for her help, she has provided a conduit between us and the VA itself. And I can't
extremely
not
supportive. What
she's done. She is not a veteran, but she's been around them her whole life. I believe she's even a military brat. So, so we accept her as one of the boys, as it were. And of course, to Magister Lex Frost, the owner and operator of the Undercroft and of SatanMe.com. We have inducted him as a full-fledged honorary member, and I'll tell you why in a few months. But suffice it to say, he is a full-fledged member now. So Magus Peter H. Gilmore, Magister Peggy Nadramia, Priestess Christine McGuire, and Magister Lex Frost, cheers, and welcome to the Legion.
Cheers.
Hey, Lou.
But yes, of course, we have to do a shout out for Radio Free Satan in general, just for giving us the platform to do this. If it wasn't for them putting up with their nonsense on here, we would be relegated to coming up with our own RFS feed and YouTube channel, and it probably wouldn't sound as good as it does.
No.
But we're not done yet. There is more congratulations to come. And this one goes out to some of our very own officers. We have to give a shout out to the Infernal Legion's vice commander and fucking workhorse, Rick Kohlmeier, for being elevated to warlock, second degree in the Church of Satan. Honestly, I cannot imagine anyone more deserving of that honor than him, except for maybe this next guy, who is our very own sergeant at arms in the Infernal Legion, now warlock, Wes Vanderpool. So, gentlemen, I know you're listening because you fucking better be. Congratulations. Welcome to the rank of warlock. I hope you get the sexy mug. And next time we chat, we can all have the warlocks are sexy party going on. Well, that's right. It's a huge, all kinds of awesome news coming down for the Infernal Legion. There's some other stuff that I just found out about that are in the works for the Infernal Legion as a whole. I'm not going to talk about that on this episode. Maybe next month we'll see how it all comes about. But just all kinds of crazy stuff is happening right now. So congratulations to our new honorary members of the Infernal Legion. Congratulations to our two new warlocks, Warlock Kohlmeier and Warlock Vanderpool. And this ball is just going to keep on rolling after this commercial break.
In 1966, Anton LaVey created the Church of Satan, marking the beginning of the Age of Fire and Year One Anno Satanas. In 1969, he published The Satanic Bible, codifying Satanism as a religion, the first time it's been done in human history.
In the name of Satan, ruler of the earth, king of hell, come forth from the pit, bestow the blessings of hell upon us. For we are your children, and we invoke thee this night.
In 2001, I was appointed High Priest of the Church of Satan. In 2007, I published the Satanic Scriptures, further defining and expanding on Satanic philosophy and greater magic ritual.
Hail Satan full of might. Our allegiance is with thee. Cursed are they. The God adorers. And cursed are the worshippers of the Nazarene eunuch.
For the past 50 years, the Church of Satan has stood as the sole organization to define and defend Satanism as a religion. And though pretenders to the infernal throne have come and gone, we have stood the test of time and will into the future. Visit churchofsatan.com for more information and read the Satanic Bible and the Satanic Scriptures. Knowledge is the solution for ignorance. Hail Satan!
Hail Satan!
This is Reverend Gene, the host of Vox Satane, exclusively on Radio Free Satan. Join me every week as we indulge in the classical side of music spanning the past 1,000 years. Vox Satane has already featured over 700 composers covering medieval, baroque, classical, romantic, and contemporary music, including chant, choral, opera, keyboard, and orchestral music, with composers ranging from Gluck to Gilmour, Bach to Bellavance, Talis to Taverner, and Paganini to Pärt. Get your weekly recommended dose of classical music right here on Vox Satane, only on Radio Free Satan, with me, Reverend Gene. Hail Satan!
I used to flip through one television station after another, disgusted by what was supposed to pass for comedy. Seeing all of those terrible, predictable comedians made me sad, and it made me shake in my seat. I thought it was the early signs of restless leg syndrome combined with clinical depression. So I went to see my doctor. It turned out that I just needed to listen to better comedy. That's when my doctor recommended The Devil's Mischief on Radio Free Satan.
The Devil's Mischief is a one-hour dosage of comedy and novelty that's made for you, not for the masses. After a decade of biased research, The Devil's Mischief has been clinically proven to be effective at inducing laughter and whimsical feelings in many listeners.
I can finally laugh again.
You don't need a prescription to listen to The Devil's Mischief. You don't even need to visit a pharmacy. That's because The Devil's Mischief is not a pill. It's not a syrup. It's not a spray, a cream, or even a suppository. It's a podcast.
All I need is a connection to the internet.
To learn all you need to know to listen to The Devil's Mischief, visit the official website, devilsmischief.com.
Whether you like to listen to podcasts in your web browser, download an episode directly, or subscribe to podcasts with iTunes, The Devil's Mischief can help.
Side effects may include side splitting, gut busting, knee slaps, and slapstick. Some listeners have reported being in stitches, with gags, or finding it to be a riot. Do not listen to The Devil's Mischief while drinking a beverage. Ask your doctor if The Devil's Mischief is right for you.
Or don't. Why should you have to pay that stupid copay for a doctor's visit?
Listen to The Devil's Mischief on RadioFreeSatan.com.
Come with me, Warlock Jeff Ivins, for a time trip back to the 1980s on the Metro. I play synth pop and other hits from the decades of indulgence, only on RadioFreeSatan.com.
Attention iTunes users, if you like this show and other programs from Radio Free Satan, then please take a moment to look us up on iTunes to rate and comment on the program. You can also do the same on Stitcher.com. Look up this program on Stitcher.com, rate it, and give us a review. And that's if you like the show, of course, you know, that you want to give it 5 stars and a good review, not, you know, give it 1 star and say a bunch of mean things. But hey, if you want to do that, then I'm sure there are a bunch of Christian podcasts on iTunes that you could do that on. Anyway, thank you for your support of RadioFreeSatan.com. And now back to the program.
Welcome back to the official Infernal Legion podcast, the sinister scuttlebutt for the month of July 2020. And we're going to jump into some military news here, the news that affecting the military and veteran community around the world, although I believe today's is all active military news. We're going to start off with a feel-good story. At least I like to think it's a feel-good story. Effectively, Secretary of Defense Mark Esper has banned the Confederate flag from being displayed both by installations themselves and by service members on installations. Now, I say effectively banned because he didn't outright say the Confederate flag is banned. What he did was release a memo from the Secretary of Defense's office describing the display rules for flags other than the United States flag on military installations, and he tactfully left the Confederate flag off of that list. Which, in essence, as everyone knows in the military, in essence means it's banned because there's no regulation on how it can be displayed. So I give him props for being political. But I also give him props for effectively banning the Confederate flag, and I'll tell you why. For all of you listening out there, especially those of you in the South, I should say from the South, because most of my co-hosts are in the South, but neither of them are Southern.
No, I'm not.
I don't give a fuck if you consider it a sign of heritage. I have plenty of friends who do the same thing, and it personally doesn't bother me when they rock the Confederate flag. Although deep down inside and in the back of my mind, I'm thinking they're a fucking idiot. But the point for this, for me, is that this flag should not be flown on any military installation for a very simple reason. We fought a war against them.
And they lost.
And they lost. Simple as that. Now, there's a lot of debates about, oh, but, you know, they were Americans too, and yada, yada, yada. I don't give a fuck. I don't care about it. I don't want to even have the discussion with you about it. The point is, this was the flag of an army that was the enemy of the United States of America. We kicked their asses. It doesn't belong in a military installation. Period. Except maybe in a museum saying, this is a flag we captured from the South.
Yeah. Well, where do you draw the line?
That is the only caveat that I get.
Well, where do you draw the line, though, Lou? I mean, they're trying to change base names, sure, because of Confederate generals. You know that Columbus, you know, I was from Ohio too. Columbus, they're trying to change the name of the city.
Yeah, that's not gonna
happen. They've ripped down Columbus's statue.
Yes, but Columbus, this is all social stuff. All social stuff. I'm not talking about society at large. I'm talking about the military.
Society at large has a lot of reflection upon what's happening to us.
Certainly.
They're the ones who vote our politicians in.
But there are 100 political podcasts you can listen to if you want to hear about society.
Absolutely.
I'm talking about the military.
Very well.
So, as far as base name changes, I don't care.
Really?
I don't care one way or the other. And I'll tell you why. When I was stationed at Fort Drum in upstate New York, I was stationed there for about 4.5 years. It wasn't until 5 years after I got out that I even knew who General Drum was.
Right.
I don't give a shit what the base was called. And I don't. I know some service members do, and I know that there is certainly a large cost that comes with changing a name, not necessarily a social or psychological.
Oh. Did you freeze up, Jeff? Where is it, man?
Oh. So ultimately, I think the banning of the Confederate flag from military bases is a good thing. Now, like I said, there are exceptions to that. For example, if you're at a museum or whatever, and you have the captured flag of a fallen enemy force, I think that's fine. But prominently displaying the flag of an imminent force on an official U.S. military installation is, to me, just fucking stupid. And it's one of those rare things that I feel very strongly about and tend to rant about quite often in public. Along with that is, for example, I live in Ohio. And for those of you who are not students of Civil War history, Ohio is pretty prominent in the Civil War for many, many reasons, including William T. Sherman burning down Atlanta shortly after the Civil War was over. And yet I see some of the rednecks around me, and no disrespect towards rednecks. I love rednecks. but I see some of the rednecks around me flying their Confederate flag in Ohio, and I have to ask myself, do you even know where the fuck you are?
Yeah, no lie. You know, my whole thing is basically also not only is it a Confederate flag banned, but also I found out that the gay pride flag has been banned.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But
see, I don't feel as strongly about that one because it's not the flag of an enemy force. Yeah. I do suppose that the military shouldn't be taking political stances.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. But does that mean for individual use as well?
Yeah.
On a post?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
But that it was just the same way that the Confederate flag was left off that list of flags that you could fly. The gay pride flag was actually also included in that. And, you know, my take on the whole Confederate flag is, you know, basically, to me, the flag that they should be flying is the white flag of surrender. Okay. Now, I'm from Philadelphia. So, I'm a northerner. But it's like, if you want to claim heritage, well, the Confederate battle flag is not the true Confederate flag. It's something they came up with after the fact.
Yeah, I think the closest that anything got to it was the Navy Jack, but even that was a small square version.
Yeah.
Not big flag.
Well, basically, they had a small version sitting on a white flag, and then they decided that it looked like too much of a surrender.
Which they should have just kept that in hindsight.
Yeah. And then they added a red stripe at the edge of the, not where
the border.
Lanyards are at. Well, it's just a red on
the tip.
On the tip
like
of the
it,
flag.
Like it was dipped in blood almost.
Yeah. That was the actual Confederate national flag.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they should be flying, not the battle flag.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's a lot of different, I guess you could say, takes and opinions people mm-hmm. could have about it. But that's why, you know, I said what I said earlier, I want to kind of limit the discussion to how it affects the military. And one of the things that you have to learn in the military, and you have to learn it very, very quick, is you don't have the same freedoms as the average citizen when you're in the military. It doesn't exist. Political stances, things that may seem normal to you, but could possibly affect unit cohesion. Things of that nature just cannot be allowed in the military because the military has to function a certain way. And then, as I ranted about a little bit there, my personal stance on this, it's the flag of an enemy combatant who was defeated in combat.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care about these people's feelings when it comes to the military installations. Now, there's a conversation you can have about society at large, but we're not here to have that conversation.
No.
But Dwayne, do you have any thoughts about the Confederate flag being banned on military installations?
No, I said my piece earlier.
But this was interesting. And you know what I will say is extremely interesting. And I know people are going to go into a talk about when they listen to this, they're going to talk about politics. They're going to talk about who the president is. They're going to talk about all this stuff. But I do find it very interesting that it is a Republican administration, essentially, that this happened under. Because for at least the last couple of decades, you don't tend to see stuff like that or any kind of hatred towards the Confederate flag come out of Republicans. So that's interesting to me. Only time will tell what that means ultimately.
Yeah.
But I do find it interesting. All right. So that is what's happening with the Confederate flag. Let's move on to this very mysterious and kind of strange 4-day long fire that happened aboard the USS Bonham Richard. Am I saying that right, Jeff?
Yeah.
Bonham Richard. Okay. We have to kind of backtrack a little bit to talk about what happened here. We're now about, I think, 3 days removed from the end of the fire. But the military officials don't know what started the fire. All they know is that a fire broke out on the ship. From what I can tell, they can't even tell where it started yet. I'm sure they'll figure that out.
Yeah.
But right now, they can't tell where it started on the ship. But this fire broke out, and it caused numerous secondary fires and explosions aboard the ship. It took local fire departments and the Navy's firefighters and, of course, the crew of the ship to put it out. And it blazed for 4 days straight. Now, this has happened at a harbor. It didn't happen out at sea, so that's important.
Yeah, it happened at in San Diego.
Yeah.
So if people don't know where the Baham Richard is stationed at, and I'm not giving out anything new because it's all been over the news.
It sounds like okay. So according to the latest statistics, they're not really statistics, but you know, latest numbers. 17 sailors and 4 civilians were seriously injured. However, 63 people total, 40 sailors and 23 civilians, have been treated for minor injuries, including heat exhaustion and smoke inhalation. Which is to be expected in a small confined space when there's a fire. It's going to happen. But I find it very interesting that that nobody can figure out where the fire started, what started the fire, and that it blazed this long. I'm going to shift over to you real quick here, Jeff, because I want you to talk about what firefighting procedures are like on Navy ships. I know that's a huge deal.
Oh, yeah.
So why don't you talk about fire on Navy ships for a minute and explain what the process is?
Well, the two biggest threats on a ship is fire and flooding. Okay. Basically, you know, without them knowing what exactly started the fire, it's kind of hard to decipher. I know the fire reached over 1,000 degrees in temperature, and it melted part of the superstructure. I mean, there's a big hole in the forward mast fell down, and there's a big hole and stuff like that. They have, without giving out any certain information or whatever, but they've got the fire crews that are on board. Most of them are engineering type. They fight the fire. Everybody goes through firefighting school in the Navy because, like I said, it's one of the two big things. But fighting fire, I mean, they were dumping seawater on it. They were using halon. They were probably using what's called AFFF, which is it's a type of foam they're not supposed to use when they're, 50 miles.
They're not supposed to use
it. They're not supposed to use it within 50 miles of the coast because it's that damaging to the environment. But they probably use that as well just to get it back under control.
Yeah, I mean, when it's going for 4 days straight, it stops no matter what.
Exactly.
The article I got, and I don't know the ship structure being Army, but the article I got said it started in the well deck.
Okay.
Yeah. What is the
well deck? It's one of the below decks.
It's saying cargo V.
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Yeah, it makes sense.
That's where it started, yeah, the well deck. Cargo V,
and they were talking
whether that's 5 or what, I don't know.
Yeah, cargo V is basically it's not a food storage area. Yeah, it's not dry storage. It's probably has to do with something with fuel.
Okay, interesting. And that would explain why it got so out of control so fast, mm-hmm. too. Interesting. All right. Yeah, so this was a crazy fire. Now, for the listeners to understand, the Bonham Richard was an amphibious assault ship, which means it was designed to basically drop off Marines.
That's what the Gator Navy is. We're the Uber for the Marines.
Right. Now, I did find it interesting that prior to being stationed in San Diego, which happened in 2018, mm-hmm. it was docked for 6 years in Japan.
Yeah. For deployed.
What what kind of is the role of amphibious assault ships in the Navy right now? Because it doesn't, I mean, we're not dropping off Marines via ship in a lot of places.
Well, basically, the Gator Navy does do, they do transport Marines, yes. But the main issue about it, if they say like Iraq invaded Kuwait again,
okay,
the Marines would either fly over or the ships would take them over and help them in landing on the beach.
So it's still, even though it's not being used a lot right this moment, it's still a very important aspect of
the Yes, Navy. It's very important. It was probably not stationed. I think I know where it was stationed at in Japan. I'm not going to say where, but I think I know.
Yeah, it only says on the article, it just says it was stationed in Japan. So they probably were keeping where secret for a reason.
Yeah. That's why it's like I'm sitting there going, okay, well, that, remember OPSEC.
Right. So now in this situation, the Bonham Richard was stationed at, it was docked in San Diego. Mm-hmm. So you had local fire departments that could fight it from the land. You had, obviously, the sailors on board could fight it internally.
Yes.
You had other...
The Marines that could get out their crayons.
Yeah.
They all melted.
Maybe that's what they're used for, is for their crayons. I don't know.
Yeah, the deep five storage crayons.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe that's where it started. I always bust on the Marines.
Right, I know. It's one thing that we don't have any Marines in the officer corps here in the Infernal Legion, and I feel bad about that because when we talk shit about Marines, nobody's there to answer back.
It might be a good thing. We piss somebody off.
So you had fire suppression units from the sea as well, and then we had air support units that were dropping personnel and chemicals and whatnot in as well. Jeff, what would happen if this fire broke out at sea?
They would be doing the same thing that they were doing.
They had plenty of water to put it out with.
Yeah, unfortunately, some of the metal actually caught fire.
Really?
It was 1,000 degrees.
Aluminum floor is about the same temperature as the Twin Towers.
Yes. The superstructure would have been, it'd probably last, the fire would probably gone in about 10 days if the fire was that hot.
And, do you think the ship would have even survived, honestly?
It may have. Yeah. I mean, think about it. During World War II, we had a carrier that was targeted by kamikazes, and within 2 months it was back out at sea.
Oh, that's a good point.
Look at the ship that was over in Somalia or over in Africa that got blasted in the side. Was that the coal? Remember the big hole?
That was in
Yemen. The USS Cole.
Yeah, that was in Yemen.
Yemen, thank you.
So, well, they find a way
to keep them afloat.
Yeah. The compartmentalization of the ship lends to the watertight integrity of the ship.
Which should also help with fire.
It's kind of like what the Titanic was supposed to do.
Yeah.
Shut bulkheads so they don't sink.
Yeah, exactly. And they didn't do it. But so it sunk. But so, the ship is probably salvageable.
We talked a bit, and I'm totally picking your brain on this because you were in the Navy, and I know this is a big Navy thing.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about how important fire and firefighting is in the Navy. How does something like this affect moving forward? Like, obviously, fire is already it's the second biggest thing they preach, as far as I can tell, in the Navy.
Yeah.
Is this going to change any SOPs, or is it just one of those freak accidents there's nothing they can do about?
It could have been just a freak accident. You never know. Until they actually fully investigate it, they won't know if any SOPs are going to need to be changed. It could have been a contractor did something stupid. It could have been a sailor who forgot to log something out that he should have before the, because it was being, they had civilian contractors working on the ship. Mm-hmm. It could be just about anything.
A marine mixed ammonia and bleach.
That, yeah, that too. And then decided to smoke a crown.
That's interesting too, because and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, Jeff, but I know that the Navy recently banned smoking on submarines, but as far as I know, it's still allowed on ships.
Yeah, certain designated areas they allow smoking. Now, some ships, I know a couple carriers, they've actually banned it completely. Back in the 90s, a couple of the newer carriers don't have smoking available at all.
Gotcha. Okay.
But when I was...
I think we can all see the writing in the cards.
They want to get rid of smoking. Yeah. When I was on the Ranger, we went from you could smoke in generally work certain workspaces to places that had, you know, proper ventilation and stuff like that. So it went from probably about 50% being able to smoke down to 10%.
Yeah. Well, and I say this as a smoker, and Jeff, you're an occasional smoker as well.
Oh yeah.
Considering the risk that fire is on a ship in the Navy, I'm kind of surprised that smoking has lasted this long in general.
Well, now when they do unreps, where they're taking on fuel and stuff like that, this I know is they don't allow smoking during that time. There's times when
it's too much flammable material.
Exactly. Right? You know, you're bringing fuel on board and you're turning around and having somebody sit there smoking. If you get a leak, poof.
At that point, two ships could catch on fire.
Honestly. Exactly.
Man, it's crazy. So, I mean, we'll definitely hear on the Sinister Scuttlebutt episodes. We'll definitely keep you up to date on whatever they end up telling us about this fire.
Yeah.
All we know right now is that several sailors and civilians were injured. The fire burned for about 4 days, and the future of the ship is unknown. At this point, they don't know if they're going to salvage it or not. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, if it can't be salvaged, they found a new person to purchase steel from.
Exactly.
For the new ship.
Well,
the same person that was building their submarines?
Yeah, right. No lie.
And if you're wondering what that reference was, listen to last month's episode. So let's move on to the boys in the Wild Blue Yonder, the United States Air Force, because, of course, what would a podcast in 2020 be without talking about coronavirus? And while looking for some interesting coronavirus news, I stumbled across this little tidbit that the United States Air Force Thunderbirds have been grounded indefinitely due to coronavirus outbreaks amongst their crew. So for those of you who are not familiar with the Thunderbirds, you are probably familiar with the Navy's Blue Angels. The Thunderbirds are the Air Force's version of that. And they would kill me for saying that, but it's true. So they are a display, I don't know what the proper term is for them, wing of the Air Force, flight, whatever you want to call it.
Wing.
They go out and they do these air shows. The pilots do super risky stuff. They're really fun to watch. I got a chance to watch them at Nellis Air Force Base a few years ago. They are a lot of fun to watch. And they also do things like patriotic flyovers and sports, flyovers, things like that. They were scheduled to do a show in Cheyenne, Wyoming. When all the results came back. Now, I want to be very clear about this. None of the pilots have tested positive for coronavirus. It's just the ground crew. But without the ground crew being together, Anyone who's been around aircraft at all knows that that's a super dangerous place to be. So you rely on your crew to fix up your aircraft, make sure that it's flight ready and all that stuff. So without the whole team being ready, they can't fly and they've been grounded. Dwayne, you had the information. What was the event they were supposed to fly in Wyoming?
That would be the Cheyenne Rodeo Fest. And this is the first time it's been canceled in 124 years.
They canceled the whole festival? Or
they canceled the whole festival.
Wow.
Well, the Thunderbirds ain't been out there for 124 years.
No, they've 1958 or whatever.
Yeah. They're just one or two years older than the... Actually, no, I think the Sea Cadets are actually 1 or 2 years older than the Air Force.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Now, of course, the Air Force originally was the Army Air Corps, and they like to claim that, though the Army likes to disavow.
But, the Thunderbirds are scheduled for another event, 15-16 August in Ocean City, Maryland.
Yeah, and it's right now it's up in the air whether or not that'll go through. I guess it depends on what happens with the coronavirus thing.
Right.
The Thunderbirds, though, I do know a little bit about the Thunderbirds. I lived in Las Vegas for about a decade. I was married to an active duty airman at the time. So I know a little bit about the Thunderbirds, and I know that they basically get whatever the fuck they want. So my guess is that the next scheduled show will go on because everyone who tested positive will just be kicked out real quick and replaced in the blink of an eye. And that's the wonderful thing about the military is everyone is replaceable. It doesn't matter how high ranking or low ranking you are.
I would say expendable.
Yeah, expendable as well, especially when you're talking about Marines.
Yeah. They hit the beach first, so the Navy can come in and have a beach party.
So, yeah, it remains to be seen what's going on with that. Now, all this means is that some of I believe the number was 14, but they won't say who they were, obviously, for opposite reasons. But about 14 people tested positive for coronavirus. That doesn't necessarily mean anything. We've talked about this before on the show when it comes to the pandemic, when it comes to COVID-19 and all that. People who are in the military are generally young, in close to the best shape of their life, if not in the best shape of their life. And they're eating, I wouldn't necessarily call it healthy, but balanced.
Right. Food.
So they have good diets. They have good exercise regimens. They're young. Their immune systems are top of the order.
They drink alcohol very well.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Damn. And supposedly that helps. So, clanky clanky.
They tend to be more.
So they're probably all going to survive. I don't imagine. And if I get this wrong, I apologize in advance to the families. I don't imagine anyone's actually at severe risk for this. They just tested positive for having the virus. So it remains to be seen what all is going to happen with that. But when August rolls around, we will let you know if the next show happens or not. And moving forward for the future, if you haven't seen the Thunderbirds perform, I highly, highly recommend it. And the same with the Navy's Blue Angels. It is just absolutely incredible to watch what these fighter pilots can do with these pieces of equipment. It's amazing. But let's go ahead and move on. And I wanted to talk about this next thing, not because of the subject matter itself. It's just going to be the piece of news that we discuss. I wanted to start doing this on every Sinister Scuttlebutt episode because what I've been noticing lately, honestly, is pissing me off. And that is that we have had a war going on in Afghanistan for almost 20 years. We're just about a year shy of 20 years. Of a war happening in Afghanistan. And nobody is fucking reporting on it anymore. And it irritates the crap out of me because every single day, Dwayne, Jeff, and myself, and everyone else in the Infernal Legion are losing brothers and sisters over there. We are having people come home, new Legionnaires that are joining the Legion as soon as they get home, that have just come out of the situation. This month's Wicked Warrior, who we're going to interview in a couple weeks, is someone who just recently retired and has done time in Afghanistan. This war is still happening, but with everything else going on and the media's, you know, twisted priorities, no one's talking about it anymore, so it's not a priority for anyone. And I think that needs to change.
It's kind of like the Apollo landings in the 70s, you know. They watched the first couple, and yeah, people lost interest in it, and it's a shame that they've lost interest in it. They need to have more interest in it so they know what the hell's going on, and maybe, I'm not being political or anything, but maybe help to get us out of there, maybe right, say yeah, something. Yeah.
And it doesn't matter necessarily which side of that fence you fall on, whether you think right, it should be ended or whether you think it should go on. The point is, if it's not news, if people don't remember that it's happening, none of this gets changed.
Out of sight, out of mind.
We should yeah, not forget about our brothers and sisters oh, and no, soldiers, yeah, or yeah, our soldiers that are over there.
No.
That, yeah, and personally, I know that Dwayne and I line up on this. I'm pretty sure Jeff does as well. I think we need to get out of there. But they're never going to pull us out if people don't keep the pressure up on the politicians.
And the reason why that is they don't want to lose face. I mean, the Russians were over there, what, 20 years before that?
Yeah.
And the Afghans say, we beat Russia. They'll turn around and say they beat us mm-hmm, if we pull right, out, and they want to avoid that,
right? Which is to me is the
again,
most challenging
political.
But you know, and that's the thing too. Is like I like to tread the line. I don't like to talk about politics. Similar right, to when I was in the military, I didn't take an official political stance with anyone because it would be improper.
Yeah.
I try to do that with the show as well. But when you're discussing things like ongoing wars and whatnot, there's some aspects of politics you just can't avoid.
Yeah.
Right.
So if you don't like our opinions, feel free to write what you don't like on the back of a $20 bill and mail it to us, and we'll be sure to read it on the next episode.
Yeah.
So let's jump into what's happening in Afghanistan right now. And there's a new piece of news that's kind of developed over the last month or so. I use the term news on this very lightly because it's kind of just a rumor, but the idea is that Russia has been putting bounties on U.S. troops in Afghanistan. And the reason I'm hesitant to call this either news or rumor or whatever is because nobody can really get their story straight on this. The intelligence community says that they briefed the president and the Department of Defense about this. The administration says that they were never briefed. And then some elements within the intelligence community say that, yeah, they were briefed, but not about this because it didn't rate high enough. We didn't have enough information to determine if it was true or not. So what happens when something gets lost like that? The same thing that always happens in the military. You go to the boots on the ground and get the real story from the men in the field. So we are, via the Associated Press, going straight to the boots on the ground and going to hear what General Frank McKenzie, the commander of CENTCOM, has to say about it. For those of you who are not familiar with CENTCOM, CENTCOM is Central Command in the United States Army. They're the command group that has responsibility for Iraq, Afghanistan, the whole Middle Eastern theater, basically. So when you become the general, four-star general, who's in charge of CENTCOM, you're essentially responsible for the war. So what does General McKenzie think about what's going on? Well, General McKenzie's exact words is that he is skeptical that bounties led to troops' death in Afghanistan. Now, this is interesting to me because he does not at any point deny that there are bounties on U.S. troops provided or paid for by Russia to the Taliban. And no point in this article and anything that he says, and I've double-checked this with the Military Times as well, he never denies that there are bounties. His skepticism is whether or not those bounties are leading to troops' deaths. And he says, I find it, this is quote, I'm sorry, so quote, I found it very worrisome. I didn't find there was a causative link there.
That's political.
Right, yeah, absolutely. And anyone who's a general rank in the military has to be a politician as well.
Yeah.
But so essentially what is I'm piecing this together, and I'm going to say this, and if I get black bagged tomorrow, then you guys know what happened. But Russia has put bounties on U.S. troops in Afghanistan. And as of right now, the intelligence community doesn't know if anyone has claimed those bounties. That's what's happened, as far as I can tell. This should stand to be a constant reminder that what has been playing out in the Middle East over the last 20 years is not a isolated incident. We did not declare war on Iraq. We did not declare war on Afghanistan. We declared war on terrorism, which is a very nebulous concept. That war takes us throughout the world and sent into a variety of different places that affect other national actors as well. If anything, this should be a reminder that Russia is not our friend and it is not our ally. There are times over the last few decades that we've been able to work and cooperate with Russia on certain things. There have been far more times over the last few decades where we've been directly at odds with Russia. And again, I'm going to state this just because I'm looking at the picture that I've been presented and I can't see another solution to this. Now we're at the point where they were actually offering money to our enemies to kill our troops. I'm not a warmonger, right? I enjoy competition. I enjoy martial arts and things like that. I don't necessarily enjoy fighting. I certainly don't enjoy sending my country to war with another superpower, especially one who has nuclear weapons. But when you start offering terrorists money to kill our troops, something needs to happen. That's where I stand on it. What do you guys think?
I'm going to get political, so I'm going to button it a second. Let me rethink how I'm going to phrase this.
And the way I say it is, if it is true that Russia is doing this, that is basically they're using a third-party insurgency to take on the United States. Mm-hmm. And it's just like they did in Vietnam. It was a third party, and it was the Vietnamese. And I'm sorry, but I've never
tried.
Russians were also involved in Vietnam.
Well, China
it was the USSR
still,
at the time, but yeah.
Yeah, but China was still pissed off at us from Korea, and they had something to do with it,
well,
too.
Yeah. Well, at the time, Korea or Vietnam, it was the Russians and the Chinese had a common enemy, and that was us. That's why that's why they work together. Nowadays, not so much. But if you put a bounty on somebody's head, then I'm sorry to say you have never been a friend of this country. I mean, these are sons, daughters, mothers, fathers,
brothers, sisters,
you know. And if it, like I said, if it is true that Russia is doing this, I don't know why anybody would trust Putin ever. I've never trusted Putin to begin with. Mm-hmm. I don't, because he's former KGB. And
he still is, but he's the leader of the country.
They don't call it,
the KGB doesn't officially exist anymore.
No, they have another. There's another terminology.
The men in black.
But no, my whole thing is basically, if it's true, then this country needs to do something about it.
Yeah, I feel like, and again, I said I'm very hesitant to be a warmonger, to be a war hawk, as it were. Especially with another nuclear power, but it comes a point where enough is enough.
Yeah.
And for me personally, that point is when you are offering money so that some terrorist piece of shit in a cave in Afghanistan can cut the head off of my brother or sister.
Exactly.
And that gets me fired up, and I'm ready to go back to war at that point, you know? And like I said, it's very interesting that the general never denies that the bounties are happening. He just denies right now he doesn't see enough evidence that anyone's essentially collected the bounty.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, is a good thing, because technically speaking, right now we are in a term of negotiation with the Taliban over what the future of Afghanistan is going to look like. And while I'm obviously hesitant to trust an active enemy combatant, we have to let that diplomacy run its course. Yep. And see if it's going to work out. Mm-hmm. So it is quite possible that Russia's offered the bounty, but that the Taliban's refused to take it up because they might get their country back in their eyes. Their you know, mm-hmm. quote unquote country in their eyes.
They'll make more in the long run.
Right. So they may have laid off. But if those peace talks break down, there's going to be a whole lot of people putting their hands out towards Russia waiting for a payout.
Yep. That's why when I sit there and say we got to do something, it's generally what we got to do is sanctions on Russia if it is true. Now, I personally tend towards believing the intelligence community because of what I did in the Navy. Mm-hmm. So I kind of tend towards believing them over this administration, who has in the past tried to discredit the intelligence community. And so I'm taking the intelligence community side on this.
All right.
I'm with Ivan on that as well. I mean, what has officially been put out that I've heard is that it made it into the president's daily report, but we don't have control of how much or what sections of that report that the president has read. So he was given the information, whether he read it or not is on him, and that
essentially that's
between the president and
the national security advisor gives a essentially a death by PowerPoint presentation,
right? Absolutely, when you get
the intelligence briefing. So the NSA might have left it out, even though it was in the report. And the presidents very rarely read full reports; they rely on that PowerPoint presentation. Whether he knew about it then or not, it's out there now.
Right. The way old Donnie boy is, he probably said, I don't want to hear about that shit.
Yeah.
That's why they left him out.
Well, supposedly there's a rumor that anytime somebody brings up Russia, he tells them, just don't tell me.
Right. Well, that's what I was getting.
There is certainly, and it's not... President Trump is not the first person to implement this kind of policy.
With
giant superpowers, foreign superpowers, basically. Plausible deniability is a thing, folks.
Yep.
9 times out of 10, it is safer for a president or a congressman or whoever to say, I know nothing, like Sergeant Schultz on the old
Heroes,
and let the military and intelligence do what they were going to do about it.
Yeah.
So who knows? Who knows what's going on there? What I do know is that from what I can tell, it seems to be true that at least someone in the Russian government, maybe they were acting, alone. Who knows? But someone in the Russian government offered bounties on the heads of American troops in Afghanistan. And this could go sideways very, very fast. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But the reason we talked about this, like I said at the beginning of this little story, was that I'm sick to death of news agencies not covering Afghanistan anymore, not covering what's happening there. And not just Afghanistan, Iraq as well, even though combat operations have, for the most part, ceased in Iraq. We still have troops stationed there.
Yep.
And so I want to, as part of our Sinister Scuttlebutt episodes moving forward, I always want to incorporate some news coming out of Iraq, Afghanistan, Yemen, Libya, all the places that we're still fighting the G1.
Mm-hmm.
So you can look forward to that. But that's kind of a heavy note, and I don't like to end shows on heavy notes. So I would like to throw out some good news to kind of book into this. We started it with some great news, and we're going to end it with some great news. This one is not Infernal Legion news, and it's not military news. This is Radio Free Satan news. Our fellow hostess of a show here on Radio Free Satan that many of you have probably listened to, Confessions of a Wicked Witch, Magistra Ygraine Mitchell, her daughter has been fighting cancer for a long time, and most of the people who listen to this show will know that. And you've seen the GoFundMes and all that. I know that I've donated to the cause. I believe Dwayne has donated to this cause as well. Pretty sure Jeff has donated to it. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But we've all been invested in this because Magister Ygraine is a close friend of a lot of ours, mm-hmm. A mentor to some of us, family to some of us.
If you've ever met her, you can do nothing but love her.
Yeah.
And so the excellent news is that her daughter, Chelsea, is finally cancer free. And that's fucking incredible. And so happy to hear that. To Magister Ygraine and her whole family, congratulations on the cancer free diagnosis. This has been a very hard road. And I know that there were times where she felt like she couldn't go on, but she kept fighting, and it worked out in the end. Of course, that's not the end of the story, as anyone knows, when it comes to medical bills and things like that. There is still a need to pay off these medical bills, plus follow-up exams, appointments, to make sure that she remains cancer-free. So the GoFundMe is still out there. I encourage you all to visit GoFundMe.com and search for – I'm going to read you the title of the campaign because the link is way too long for me to read. So go to GoFundMe.com and search for Help Chelsea and Ava During Stage 3 Cancer Treatment. The organizer is Chelsea Ray. You'll see that. That is Magister Ygraine's daughter. It's also, for the wrestling fans out there, it is the sinister minister himself, Father James Mitchell's stepdaughter. So you can also just find him on social media. He's pretty prominent. And I'm sure there'll be a link that you can find very quickly to that. I believe, Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong, we're also going to put this in the description of the show.
Yes, I've already got it lined up.
All right, excellent. So at this point,
many of you frequent my page or my Facebook. I post it all the time there. I know Ivan's posts it. Yep. Whenever we see it, we share it. So, I mean, you'll be seeing it in the future as well, because we're going to keep it out there and keep trying to help her.
Yep.
Right. So, again, terrific news. Chelsea is cancer-free. Congratulations to the entire Mitchell clan out there. We love you guys. Make sure you check out Confessions of a Wicked Witch right here on Radio Free Satan. And also, you know, while you're tooling around on the internet, make sure you check out InfernalLegion.org and all of our various social media platforms to find out what's going on in our world and what's happening with the elite among the alien elite. But until next time, on behalf of Dwayne Burns and Jeffrey Ivins, I am Warlock Jeff Bowen, the commander of the Infernal Legion. And in a couple weeks, we will visit you again with our Wicked Warrior of the Month episode featuring a very good friend of ours. So until next time, folks, hail Satan.
Hail Satan.
Hail Satan.
Veteran Suicide Hotline. Phone number is 1-800-273-8255. 1-800-273-TALK. And as soon as you dial that, you press number 1. Also, you can text to 838-255 for more information. But it is just as effective as chat. Support is free, confidential, and available 24/7. It is available to all servicemen and women, active and inactive, guard or reserve, and available to veterans, family members as well.